Hello, friends. This is the Oscar Mendaris Show, the best Spanish podcast out there. This is a special English edition. Next week, I will be back on my normal Spanish format. Jenny is the Alabama GOP Communications Director, and I had the opportunity to speak with her about the current issues affecting Latinos here in Alabama. We also talked about Lexit, the economy, school choice, and even the Second Amendment. I enjoyed the conversation with Jenny, and I know you will too. Ready? Here we go. Hi and welcome. This is the Oscar Armendariz Show. I'm not really used to doing it in English, but I know many people have been asking me for a English episode. So this is the second one for those of you who are asking for it. Here it is. I hope to do some more later. And today we're going to be talking about politics. More specifically, we're going to be talking about the Latino in politics. More specific than that, about the GOP. And for that, Jenny Negron Bernstein.
You got that right.
Okay, good. Oh, good. All right, so the Latino community has been exiting the Democratic Party for some time, and we have seen a massive exit in the last few months, maybe the last year or so. And because we have this two-tier systems, you know, we have the Democrats, we have the Republicans. When you exit the Democratic Party, then you pretty much land on the Republicans. But Latinos, we are conservatives. We have our values. We have our religion. We're seeking for these freedoms that many of us that are immigrants like myself, you know, we're looking for the best thing out there. And our home countries didn't offer that. So we ended up here and we're looking for those things. Now we see that we're losing a lot of those stuff. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But before we get into all those details, let's talk about you. Many people don't know you. So who are you and how you ended up here on the GOP?
Well, okay. So interestingly enough, I am Puerto Rican and American and raised in New York. And my family was, as I'm sure your listeners probably know, New York's not exactly a very conservative state, but ironically enough, my family, my parents, my grandparents, they were all really conservative and they were Republicans and raised in the party, raised with those values, respect for life, small business, being fiscally conservative, all that sort of thing. And I went from being in the media, and once I had my children, I realized I didn't want to go back into a newsroom where you're working a lot of long hours, and I started doing public relations, and one thing led to another, and I started doing political public relations for Republican candidates, for Republican organizations, conservative groups, and that sort of thing. I'd moved to Alabama about 15 years ago, and I found more like-minded people here in Alabama than I grew up with in New York, where it's extremely liberal, and got to know a lot of our local elected officials who are very approachable here. Right. It's not like in New York where, you know, when I left, Hillary Clinton was our senator, and, you know, you couldn't just get an answer from Hillary Clinton. But I knew if I wrote Jeff Sessions or Richard Shelby, maybe not them, but somebody from their staff would respond to me. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I got to know the local legislators, my city officials, and realized this is something I wanted to be a part of and that this is what was the next step in my career.
Oh, good. So you grew up being a conservative Republican already then?
Yes.
So it's not like many of us, and I myself included, although there's a caveat on that one, because when I moved to the States was back in 99, and I moved to Washington State. It's just like New York, is not very conservative. It's actually the opposite, very, very liberal. So my ideas growing up, I was 14 years old. So growing up, you know, I was driven by those ideas. I mean, everything they believe in, because everybody around me believed it, I thought that was the norm. I thought that was the thing. So I consider myself a Democrat, although I was never a Democrat because I never really voted for Democrats because I became a citizen just back in 2020. So my first election I ever voted for was Trump's reelection, which, you know, he lost that one, although I will argue he didn't really lose it, but that's a different topic. So I never really had to exit, per se, the Democratic Party, but I did have to exit the Democratic beliefs when I was growing older. I started looking at my own family, my own values, and I started saying, wait a minute, no, I don't believe like this. I don't believe in abortion. I don't believe on just the government taking over everything, because, you know, I have firsthand experience in my own country, government controlling everything on healthcare. And if you want healthcare down in Mexico, you really have to pay private. Otherwise, you just get a Tylenol and off you go. Whatever you got. You got cancer, you got a Tylenol, you know, just kill the pain. It's awful. So to me, understanding what my ideas were, and then once I started thinking about, well, what does it really mean to be a liberal or a conservative? I said, well, no, I was not raised this way. I only became this way because everybody else. But when I looked at my family, I was like, my family is conservatives. So my roots, you know, my grandma and everything behind me, you know, family back in Mexico, they have conservative values. So I said, no, this is how I believe. So when I moved to Alabama, I realized, you know what, this is, because I moved here in 2018, I was like, I am not a Democrat. So then I started pushing to become a citizen. And once I became a citizen, then I said, well, I'm going to vote Republican because this is where my values are. They align with my values. So I want to talk a little bit more about that, because Republicans align with my values, but also we know that not every Republicans get the conservative values that I have. And that is where I'm interested in speaking with you, because I want to understand more what Alabama GOP is doing to align with, you know, how do we align GOP Alabama specifically with the Latinos? And let's touch on subject by subject. Let's start with religion, for instance. Religion is a big one for us. And we believe that we have the freedom to assemble and go to our churches. And that freedom was taken away for a little while during the pandemic. And, you know, granted, nobody knew what was happening, but after a while, we realized, okay, you can actually get together and still be okay.
And you know who made it a violation of the law to close down the churches again? Republican state legislator Jay McKeel. He introduced that law and it passed both chambers. Governor Ivey signed it into law. And now we're not going to have that happen again because the Republicans took charge. We're with you. We are with religious freedom. We want everybody to be able to practice their religion. Mm-hmm. And we're going to always stand in the gap to keep that from happening again.
Yeah. So how much power does the state has over the federal? Because now we're starting to see also some of that, you know, fights. And some example is like the abortion case with VA. They're trying to, you know, say.
I saw that yesterday. Was that yesterday in the news? That yeah. And that's going to be interesting to follow. I know that the attorney general has said he's taking a look at this. Steve Marshall, also a Republican. Mm-hmm. Every constitutional officer in this state is a Republican, by the way. Mm-hmm. And he has been at the forefront. We actually recently had our big gathering. We have two a year, one in the summer and one in the winter, where we'll bring in a guest speaker. One of the guest speakers we brought in last month right here in Montgomery was the Attorney General of Mississippi, who led the charge to get Roe v. Wade overturned. It was Mississippi's abortion law. And yep. When she got up to speak, she said, we would not have been victorious if I didn't have the support of my good friend Steve Marshall and the people of Alabama backing me up. That is something we're going to continue to fight for, to keep those laws intact, to make sure that abortion doesn't become the law of the land again. Mm-hmm. And we're extremely pro-life. We value every life, the born and the unborn. Mm-hmm. And we can't stop and think, okay, it's been overturned, everything, we're good. No, we got to keep looking, because they're trying to codify abortion up in Washington. Yeah. So we've got to keep sending people to Washington who are going to stand for our values and back our beliefs.
So the GOP in Alabama is doing this fight, and it's great, and I see that. But I got involved with politics because, you know, I got my own reasons, basically my daughters. Before, I didn't care because I was like, I'm living my life, who cares? But then when I had my two daughters, I said, well, what am I leaving behind for them? So it's really important for me that I leave a better future for the next generation. And one thing that I noticed is that the Democrats are really good at reaching the Latinos and reaching them early. And a lot of people, especially on the Lexit movement, and you talk to them, you know, they got family members from the aunt, you know, that everybody respects in the family. She's like, you know, you vote Democrat, whatever you do, just vote Democrat. And why does that come along is because Democrats have done a good job of making people leave. So what is the GOP, how's the GOP working on that front?
Well, and to go to your point first about the Democrats, yeah, they got on board early and said, we're going to mobilize in these urban centers, in your Seattles, in your New Yorks, in your LAs, in San Francisco's, which used to be the main population center for most of our immigrants from other countries coming in, especially Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of your Latino population right now, if I'm not mistaken, is in California, Texas, Florida, New York.
Yeah.
All places with big urban centers. Now you're seeing in Florida GOP has a really great ground game.
Oh, yeah.
And especially after Hurricane Maria, you saw a lot of Puerto Ricans, people from my background, who moved into Florida because they were looking for a better life, a way to make money, not have power in their homes, the things that, you know, the infrastructure was knocked out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we have gotten more mobilized. We've gotten that ground game. And we found that Latinos now, as they've moved out into other areas of the country, are a lot more open to listening. Mm-hmm. They're willing to, they come to Alabama, they come to other southern states, and they're willing to listen, and they're able to have a dialogue with us, and we're able to have a dialogue with them. And Alabama, we're now seeing more Latinos than we had in the past. And yeah, that's why we've gotten our group together, the Outreach Coalition, which Oscar is going to join us, I believe, this evening.
Right after this podcast.
After this podcast, where we have set up a ground game where we are reaching out to all minorities, African-American, Latino, Asian-American, to start that dialogue with them. And it's working. They have been making phone calls. We're able to pull the data so we know who is voting and also who is interested in listening to us, who maybe, you know, hey, look, this person voted Republican. Let's go talk to them. Let's talk to their neighbors. Let's talk mm-hmm. to their families and have that discussion. And so far it's working. It's still in its infancy. It's a big step forward for us, though. And I'm really proud of the effort of our team that's working on that right now.
So this, you say this is early. So that means there wasn't really a push before?
Not really. The Latino population, you had some who came in to work factory jobs and whatnot, mm-hmm. work on farms, that maybe weren't voters. But now we have people like your family who have moved here, who have careers, who have families, who have become citizens, who can vote. Mm-hmm. That has started to grow in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
Which I found interesting. I mean, when my daughter, my oldest, graduated from high school, she was maybe one of a handful of Latino kids.
Mm-hmm.
Very small population. Now there's a lot more in her high school because people are moving to Alabama because they want this quality of life. They align with our values and they feel that this is a place that they can call home.
Yeah. And I'm proof of that, basically, because when we moved from Washington State to Alabama, my wife and I would discuss about, you know, what is going to be our next move. And then we found great people here. We found people that are very much like us. You know, we're from Mexico. So to say that people in Alabama is very much like us, I really mean like the conservative values that we have here in Alabama are just fantastic. And the people that we have met so far have been great. We call them our family because we have no blood family here. So our neighbors are, you know, co-workers, people that we just met in life, you know, those are the people that we really came to love and really appreciate. And now we don't look at other places, not even back in our own home country, to say we're going to retire there. No, this is where we plan to retire. And that's how much we love this place, because it's got great people. But to what you were saying about reaching the people, I would also say that it might be a good idea to reach out to people who's not eligible to vote just yet. Because myself, I mean, I've been a permanent resident since 2003, I believe it was. So for many years, as I said earlier, I didn't really care for voting, because I was like, that's not what I do. That's why I was qualified to become a citizen or apply for citizenship back in 2008. And I just didn't. I said, you know, this is, as a permanent resident, you can just live here. The only difference is you can get, you know, some jobs that require clearances and whatnot. And I figured I was never going to be in that position. And the other thing is like, well, you can't vote either if you're just a permanent resident. And I was like, well, I don't really care much about that either. So I was like, I'm not going to go through the effort of becoming a citizen. But as I say, you know, later on, I find out, no, this is very important. So I imagine there's many other people out there in a similar situation than I was. It is worth reaching out and say, hey, you know.
You know, that's a really good point, which is why we need people like you to come on board the party to help introduce us to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the whole point of this effort, is we want to meet you. We want to talk to you. We want to find out what we can do, what issues are affecting you. And, you know, and not just Mexicans or Puerto Ricans, you know, this is the one thing that bothers me about the Democrat Party immensely, is they seem to lump all Hispanics into one boat. And I'm sorry, Oscar, your life, what your experiences as a Latino are completely different from my experiences as a Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Dominicans and the Cubans and Salvadorians and Ecuador and all the other, we're a bunch of countries where, yes, we do have that common language.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit it, because I love food, a lot of common foods.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have different experiences. And it's important to listen and learn what you experienced in Mexico. We can learn from that so we don't make those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we can make sure the other side doesn't lead us on a path to those mistakes. So that's why we're so interested in talking to as many people as possible. We want to meet them. We want to learn about them. And if they're citizens, we want to register you to vote. Mm-hmm. And if you're not yet a citizen, hey, talk to us. We'll see about, you know, you were eligible to become a citizen. Some people aren't, but we want you to be here legally.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to have the rights and privileges of being an American citizen. Yeah. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So speaking of being here legally, let's talk about the border, because that's another hot issue right now. I'll give you my two cents after you say your opinion on what's going on down there.
So this actually hits home for me from a national security standpoint. I lived in New York on 9/11. I remember what that was like.
Mm.
And you read these reports that there are these people on the watch list showing up at the border. That bothers me immensely. And they're doing catch and release.
Mm-hmm.
We have no way of tracking where these people are going. This is a very dangerous situation, not to mention the drugs, the human trafficking. And, you know, these people are getting exploited very often by, you know, being paid unfair wages and whatnot. We've got to secure the border. I know President Trump always said big, beautiful wall. I don't know if that's the answer. You can't exactly put a wall through the Rio Grande, but we've got to find a way to secure that border and know who is coming in.
Right.
And stop the ones that shouldn't be coming in from coming in. And the ones that want to come here and live here, help them come here and live here legally and not be in the shadows.
Right. So from my standpoint, I haven't met a Hispanic or Latino that agrees with open borders. Not one yet. I talked to many. I talked to a lot of people from Texas. They're scared. They don't want this problem. They want this to go away. So whoever told current administration that this is a good idea, I don't know where that came from, because none of us wants that. We want order. We want, you know, of course, we want legal immigration. We want a way for us to come here and bring our families. You know, that needs to be resolved. However, whatever the solution is, I've been asked many times by many different people, what is the solution? I say, I have no idea. I have no idea what the solution is. But what I do know is that what's happening right now, it's dangerous. They have trafficked people that come here illegally. A lot of times they get catch by the cartel, and they tell them, you know what, you're going to have to go there and work, and you're going to send me half your paycheck or whatever. You know, human trafficking on the with women and children. So that is a huge issue. And not to, you know, speak about the opioid problem there, all the drugs coming in. So that's a huge issue. And us, Lexit and the Latino community, we want that to be resolved. I hope to see a resolution with the current administration. But if they don't solve it, they're going to see the results of their inaction in this next election.
Well, and this is a very real problem that affects Alabama. First of all, the opioids that are coming through here. But a lot of people don't seem to realize that 2059 or 20 I-20 goes from the Mexico border from down in South Texas all the way up to Atlanta. And it's a huge smuggling route.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they all come up, and then they distribute out of Atlanta. I've seen a number of news releases from like state troopers, Aaliyah, where they've made these busts, and it is a problem for Alabama.
Yeah.
And you, I don't know what we can do on a state level. Not really very much. But once again, send it to Washington. Send good elected officials to Washington to speak on our behalf and vote on our behalf so that we can shut the border down, not permanently, but get a system in place where we can get this under control.
Yeah. Have you seen the pictures of this pail that they have? It looks like rainbow colors. It looks like candy to me.
Yes. I mean, it's crazy.
So you ask yourself, who are they targeting?
Children.
Children, exactly. So that's a huge issue for us. I mean, everybody, of course. But that's a point that a lot of people maybe are fearful to speak to Latinos, because maybe they feel like the conflict of interest, you know, we got families down there and all that. But I don't see there's a conflict of interest in our part, because, you know, there's a way to be here if you want to be here. And
unfortunately, there's a lot of fear mongering going on where everybody thinks that they're going to be deported. That's what the Democrats tell them. Oh, if the Republicans are in charge, they're all going to be deported. That's not going to happen. There's no way to deport that many people. It's get the bad people out of the country, send them back to where they're supposed to be, shut down the ability to traffic the drugs, the human trafficking, and that whole situation, and just get it under control.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like I said, national security. And here's the other thing. And I saw this, I think it was on Fox News maybe a month and a half ago. I believe it was, and it had to have been longer than that. There were Haitians at the border.
Mm-hmm.
It's not South and Latin American people only coming through. There are people from all over trying to come up through that border.
Yeah. People from Russia too.
Exactly.
So that's a situation that needs resolution, and it needs to be quickly, in my opinion. And so I'm glad to hear that we're in alignment on that one. Let's get back to the other one that we have, businesses and taxes. By nature, a lot of Latinos that I know are just, especially the older population, and there's a cultural background and to this idea of Latinos being more business minded. Especially the older people, maybe 40 and 50 and above. The reason is because, in the case, at least in Mexico, I don't know about any other countries. I believe Colombia is also an issue, but I'm not quite sure. Mexico, for at the very minimum. Once you enter the workforce, you're young. And if for whatever reason you get fired or you want to quit your job or whatever happens, you have to quit. And you're older, quote unquote. You're in your 40s and your 50s. People don't really get hired anymore. That's the culture down there. So they get into the mindset, okay, let me do a business. So when people come here, they have this business mentality. even generations later, I seen that on people who's been here three generations down the road, they just want to do businesses. And with high taxes, it's just really impossible to maintain a business.
I'll tell you actually two little stories. Not only Mexico, Colombia, my father put himself through college, put himself for his master's degree, became quite successful. He was in retail. He was a buyer for a number of department stores. And when I got to college, he got laid off and he had a hard time finding a job because he was over the age of 40. Because they wanted to hire the younger person who they could get cheaper. And so that is a problem. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Now, the other story I was going to tell you is my grandfather, Nino. So my family's Puerto Rican. Like I said, he actually emigrated because Puerto Rico's part of the U.S., but his family had moved to the Dominican Republic, where they had set up, I'm not sure if it was banana plantation, but they were like the company store where the workers would come to get their water and their supplies and whatnot when they were on breaks, sandwiches and the like. And then he came to New York and he started out working as a worker in a bodega. Mm-hmm. It was Prohibition. So it really was a wine cellar. It wasn't what we now know as a bodega. Mm-hmm. But eventually he saved up his money to buy the bodega and he turned it into a grocery store. So he was one of the first bodega owners in Spanish Harlem.
Oh, wow.
And he had a chain of them. And, you know, when we've asked people, because I didn't know him, he passed away before I was born, but I remember my mother asking, she had run into somebody who knew, had heard her last name and said, "You related to Nino Negron?" And she goes, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. He was my father-in-law." He's like, he was a great man. He wanted to help people. He wanted to be there for the community. And he taught everybody that hard work pays off because you too can be your own business owner. Mm-hmm. And you have ownership and pride in what you have. So that's another thing that kind of feeds in with my conservative values is coming from that background, because we want people to have their own business, to have their ideas and be innovative and start their own companies and grow those companies and see them be successful and have ownership in those, you know, which is why we promote lower taxes, especially for businesses, and trying to give them those tax breaks that they need to get start up. So I mean, that totally aligns with that Latino philosophy there about wanting to be a business owner and have that be that stakeholder and something that's part of our economy and our economic engine.
Okay. And as far as the efforts, is there anything you guys are pushing for? Because I know all our neighbors, state neighbors, I think they got some tax breaks over the last couple of years, except for Alabama. And what is it that the GOP is doing to help with the tax?
Well, right now, so our legislature is in session. For those of your listeners who don't know, we only are in session at that beginning couple months of the year, so like February, and it varies from year to year depending on the election cycle, but always that first part of the year, which is when all the laws and tax breaks and budgets and everything is set. We at the party are always lobbying to get you those tax cuts, to get you those tax credits, to get you those small business incentives and get those into the budget. So since they're not in session, I don't know currently what they're doing, but I know we've always lobbied and advocated for that. And hopefully I did see an article today that one of the biggest conservative think tanks, or I think it's the only conservative think tank in the state, the Alabama Policy Institute, they put out an op-ed today pushing for more tax cuts to help everybody across the board.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing it in other states. Alabama should have it too. By the way, we're also really big on eliminating the grocery tax because that helps people every day. That is something where that money is in their pocket and they can use it for other things to improve their quality of life, to reinvest in their business, to help their kids get something that they need for school or to help them educationally or even explore a talent. Like if you have a child who is in band or something like that, and you may not normally be able to afford the band, but you know, you have those extra couple of dollars. Cause I don't know if you look at the bottom of your Publix bill, but that's a lot of tax that's coming out every grocery bill.
Yeah. And it'd be nice to not have that one, especially, you know, because the inflation is really bad right nowadays, and everything is just so much more expensive.
I mean, that's the Biden tax. That's what I call that one, is the inflation. Yeah. And it's showing, I don't see it going back down. I just don't. Not if we stay on the current course that he has us on.
Right. But what do you think needs to be done to reverse course on that?
I wish I was more read up on economics to give you a really good answer for that. What I do know is that he's got to stop the spending. Yeah. I mean, it's reckless. It's that they passed this bill where what were they calling it? They were calling it
Inflation Reduction Act.
Which it's not reducing the inflation, it's spending. And then they're like, oh, but we put tax credits in there. The biggest tax credit you got is if you have an electric car and you replace the battery. And guess what? The batteries for your electric car are hugely expensive. And if I remember correctly, they're made in China, which the Chinese batteries aren't allowed to be part of this tax credit. So what's the sense there? I mean, he's just got to stop the spending and unleash energy in this country. We shouldn't be depending on other countries for our energy.
Yeah.
Especially with the turmoil that's going on in the world right now.
Europe,
Ukraine. The Middle East is never stable, and you don't want to have to owe somebody in the Middle East for something. I mean, and the president went abroad after calling the head of Saudi Arabia some horrible names during the campaign and said, I won't shake his hand, then went groveling back to him to try to get him to pump more oil for us. So, yeah. I mean, and he expected him to do it too, which just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you really think you insulted this guy and now you think he's going to do you a favor?
Yeah, Germany is fearful right now because Russia already cut all the oil and gas to them. So they don't know what they're going to do. And I'm just laughing at all that. And I'm laughing and I'm truly sad too, because we see that in California. I mean, this is now his home, right? In the United States, California, they're pushing for this green vehicles, you know, electric vehicles. And they also tell them don't charge them because we have an energy problem.
Yeah. I mean, they say one thing that when you look at the facts, doesn't even make any sense. I mean, I just have a very hard time wrapping my brain around their policies, and they've just got to stop, and we've got to get back the majority. I mean, that's really the one thing that'll help reverse course, is for us to take back the House and for us to take back the Senate, because right now Democrats have complete free reign in Washington.
Right. And I agree with that. We just have to get them out. I'm a Christian and I pray for them and I pray for them a lot. And I really want them to do the right thing, but they just keep doing the wrong thing. And well, what is the next thing we can do? And well, vote for the next person that is more like-minded like us.
Yeah. But so, the first step is, if you have the ability and you're not registered to vote, we need you to register to vote, because every vote does count. Yeah. It really does. And we have great election laws in Alabama. The election's not getting stolen here. We have passed all sorts of legislation to secure all of our ballots and make sure that that doesn't happen here. And we need your vote. We need you to get involved. We need you to use your voice, and your vote is your voice.
So speaking of that, so let's switch gears now into voting now. So we have seen some information come out. You know, there's that film, The 2,000 Mules, and there's the FBI raid that's happening with Mar-a-Lago. There's a lot of things happening that makes us not trust some entities, namely FBI. And I believe I saw a report just yesterday that says that more than half of population does not believe on the FBI anymore. What is it that the GOP plans to do about all this? Because I believe it's important for us to have trust in entities, especially one like the FBI.
Well, I would hope. Now, I can't say what the next Republican president would do, but I would hope the next Republican would ask for the resignation of the current FBI director.
But first and foremost, from the things that we can do, our representatives here from Alabama, out in Washington.
Well, okay. So there you go. That I will say, I have personally dealt for a family issue with Senator Tuberville's office. I've dealt with Congressman Palmer's office. I know Congressman Moore's staff very well. They are extremely responsive. Call them up. They are there to lobby for you. So if you see something that shouldn't be, you need to report it and let them know so that they can open up a constituent report and follow up on this and see what's going on.
Okay. At the end of this podcast, if you don't mind directing me to where the website or phone number.
Oh, absolutely.
That way I can post that with the notes of this episode.
And oh, absolutely. Yes. They all have websites where you can log in, and their phone numbers are all posted. And like I said, they're all extremely responsive. I can't think of one of them. We've got seven congressmen and we have two senators still technically. Katie Britt, of course, we're going to bring her home too. So we'll keep the two Senate seats. But yeah, I mean, the Republicans have the majority of the congressional delegation by a large margin, and we're going to keep that majority. And they all believe in constituent services and being in the community. And a lot of them actually, I know Senator Tuberville especially, has been very proactive where he'll announce. And if you look at his Twitter, I suggest you all follow your leaders on Twitter. Most of them are on there. His office regularly does constituent service days in towns where maybe he doesn't have an office, because typically your senators have in the larger cities, but they'll go out to Enterprise or they'll go out in the Black Belt and say, we're going to be here or there and come see us. And we're going to have office hours at this place from here to here. And we're here to help you.
Okay. Do they have any other way to follow them? Because now this brings me to the free speech problem that we have too. So, I mean, I don't think I need to introduce this subject very much, but we have a free speech problem.
Yeah, we do.
We've seen people. I mean, President Trump was banned from Facebook and Twitter.
YouTube too, I think.
I think he was banned from everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think he's having problems with his own social media now, Truth. I think Google didn't want to post it or something. So they're having some problems on that too. So we have a clear problem with free speech also. So before we get into what is the GOP doing with the free speech front, the way to follow our leaders, how else besides Twitter? Because I dislike Twitter ever since Trump was banned. I don't get on it.
Okay. I know a lot of them are on Getter. Some of them are on Truth Social. But I'll tell you, most of them are still on Twitter. And yeah. I know our account, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, we've never been blocked. And we keep pretty current on social media. I mean, we've not had any problems. Knock wood there. And truthfully, that is still the best way. And I agree with you. I've had high hopes that Elon Musk was going to take over Twitter. And sure enough, I saw a ton of conservatives come back to Twitter when Elon said he was going to buy Twitter. Now that's up in the air. I think he's tried to pull out and he's getting sued.
Yeah.
I'm still hopeful maybe he'll stick it out and go ahead with the purchase, because all of a sudden our followers went up on Twitter because all these conservatives started joining, and it was like this resurgence of conservatives on Twitter. I'd like to see us take back Twitter. You know, the heck with the Democrats. Let's take it back.
Yeah. It'd be nice to fix that problem, because I don't believe isolating ourselves into different social medias is the solution. Unfortunately, I have one of my own Twitter accounts banned for saying that a woman is a woman, basically. So then it says that I have to delete the post or quote unquote hateful speech. That's if I delete that, then I can get back on it. And I decided not to, because
I don't blame you there. I it's on principle.
Yeah.
I totally get that. But yeah, I think we should take back Twitter. I mean, like I said, we've not had any posts blocked or been suspended or put in Facebook jail or any of that stuff, which we've been extremely blessed.
Yeah.
And all the congressmen and senators, Governor Ivey, they all are still out there on Facebook and Twitter and posting regularly. So I still believe that's the best way. Most of them also have really active websites.
Okay.
where they put out their press releases. Because I think this is the bigger problem, is even in Alabama, our media is really pretty liberal. They I will say in certain places, the TV people, they're good. They'll get both sides of the story and everything. But the print media, your main papers, your AL.coms, your Montgomery Advertisers, they're iffy. They have an agenda. Yeah. And I don't always feel like you're getting the real news from them. I think you're getting spin.
Yeah.
And that's why I go to all the congressmen's websites, Governor Ivey's website, all of their websites to read their press releases, because their press releases aren't always getting printed in the newspaper. So if you go to their websites, you can look and see all the issues that they're taking up, what bills they're filing. They all put out these press releases. Go get it directly from the horse's mouth if you want to know what your elected officials are doing, because they're putting it out there.
Okay. So let me throw one in there. The one that I use for Alabama News is 1819 News.
Yes, we love 1819 News. Mm-hmm. Hey, Jeff Poor, he's the executive editor over there. He has a great radio show, by the way, if you live in Mobile, that he does every day, Monday through Friday in the late morning. They have a great publication. Yellowhammer News also is really good. I'm trying to think, who is the other one? Alabama Daily News, which is run by Todd Stacey. And actually, his show, if you are really interested in politics, he has the Capital Journal show on Alabama Public Television during the session. It's every night of the week, I think at 6, but they have a weekly edition now that the legislature is not in session. That airs, I believe, Friday, Saturday, Sunday on the weekends on Alabama Public Television. And he talks to all the newsmakers, too. And he has his own website called Alabama Daily News, and they put out a good publication. And all three of them, by the way, 1819, Yellowhammer, and Alabama Daily News, put out a morning e-newsletter that you should sign up for, because it's got, you get your news in little bites so that at least you can get read up real quickly if you don't have time to sit down and like search the website.
I just do that with Andrea Tice on the podcast. It's like 15 minutes in the morning.
Yeah, and she's a good friend. I love her. She is fabulous and does some really great work.
Yeah, I really love her work. That's my morning routine to work. So, all right. So free speech. So we recently learned that there was some emails exchanged in between the White House and I think it was Facebook, where they suggested that they censor some of that, or they didn't use the word censor, but suppress or something like that. The news on the laptop for Hunter Biden. So now that is clearly an extension. Now the government is using a third party to do something the government can't really do themselves, which is because it's an infraction of free speech. What can we do there? What are we doing for that?
Actually, and I'm going to tell you about that. You see something, call Attorney General Marshall's office, and I will give you that phone number. He's actually got a social media investigation team going on where they want people to report when they've been banned, when they've been blocked, all that sort of stuff. He has been out in the front on this, and he really feels that this is a violation of free speech and wants to shut this down.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I will reach out, because now that I care too much about getting my Twitter account back on there, but I also believe that was also a violation of my rights.
No, absolutely. It totally was.
Yeah. So, and earlier, you were talking about the tax on food and be able to afford what we need as families, you know, to support our families and all that. So, that also made me think about our children and education. We've seen what's happening out there in different states. I'm not aware of much happening here in Alabama, but freedom of choosing what schools to go to, homeschools and all that good stuff. I mean, we and our family, we were doing a private school this year. We decided to do homeschool just because we really don't know what's going on with public school. Not saying I have seen anything bad, but we're just fearful for what's out there, what we see on the news.
And you're not the only ones. I have so many homeschool friends. I mean, the number of homeschool friends that I have now has exceeded the number of people that I know who send their kids to public school. And I will tell you, and when we go outside, and you've already met Representative Pascal.
Yeah.
With him tonight is Representative Meadows, Charlotte Meadows, who represents right here in Montgomery. I love her work because one of her big issues is school choice and trying to get school choice legislation passed in this state. So by you taking your children out of traditional public school and deciding to homeschool them, that you're getting some of that money back and you're getting the ability to put that money where it needs to go. So let's say you decided, because you said you were Christian, that, okay, homeschooling is not really working for my family dynamic because I work and my wife works and it's, you know, we need a little bit more supervision for the kids, let's say, because I know a lot of families who tell me I would pull my kid out of school and homeschool them, but we both have to work. This would give you that flexibility to maybe send them to a Christian school,
mm-hmm.
or a private school. Homeschooling is not cheap either, because you have to pay for the lessons, the books, all that stuff that's coming out of your pocket.
And what you're missing out from your spouse working too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's one of Charlotte's big issues. She is in education and she understands this need for parents. And then Representative Pascal, before he became a state legislator, he was an advocate for parental choice. And he is big on, let's say you can't do it. You can't afford right now because we don't have school choice. You can't afford to pull your kid out and put them in private or Christian school, or both parents have to work so you can't homeschool them. He wants to empower you to go to your local school board and say, this is what happened in my school. This isn't right. What are we going to do to fix this? He encourages parents. We have to be involved in our kids' education, and that is our right as parents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we do have the dynamic duo of education out there tonight. So,
well, good. Because I have some friends coming over too, and they're very, very involved with education too. They moved here from Virginia. They are with the Air Force. And after living here for just a year, they say, this is our home, just like we did. So they're staying here now.
No, we've had a bunch of friends move down recently. My husband, I live up in Huntsville with my husband, and so there have been so many people with Redstone Arsenal up there and everything that's come into Huntsville that move in from Virginia, especially,
mm-hmm.
where they've come down here and they're like, see, this is what we're missing. This is, you know, Virginia used to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, great quality of life, affordable. And, you know, we get this bum rap about our schools being last. And I do think that it's true. I mean, the scores show it. But that being said, there are a lot of really great schools in this state, and we've got to support those teachers and those administrators and let them know when we don't like something, when something doesn't align with our values, that something shouldn't be getting taught. And I think that's why you saw last session the divisive concepts bill pass. So
what is it that we need to do, or what's missing to have school choice here?
You know, at that, Charlotte really could speak to that more. Representative Meadows, she got real close in getting it passed this past time. I think a lot of it is there's a lot of pressure from the teachers' unions not to pass it, because some reason the administrators believe that they're going to be losing out on funding. That is their, from what I understand, their biggest fear when I listen to people on the other side of the argument. She had it drawn up in a way where they weren't going to be losing, and it was going to be phased in incrementally so that adjustments could be made as needed. Because you don't want to all of a sudden say, hey, we've got school choice, and have everybody flee, and then it put this burden and strain on the system. You want to gradually phase it in. But they got real close. Like I said, my understanding is the biggest obstacle is the teachers union.
Okay. So that's something I would really like to see pass, not only for what's happening out there with all the woke people that you see, you know, teaching and children about sex life that is not their place to do, that they should not be doing that. I disagree 100% with that. They should be taught how to read and how to write, how to do math. And not only that front, but also on other fronts like special needs. For instance, in my case, I have dyslexia. A lot of people don't understand what dyslexia is fully. They know you just mix in the words, or you confuse the D's and the B's.
Yeah, I'm dyslexic, and I totally get it. It's more involved than that.
It's way more involved than that.
And
my daughter's got dyslexia, so that got me really involved with education on that front too. I mean, I joined this organization called Noticeability. Hey, Dean, I don't know if you're watching, but hi. So he's the founder of Noticeability, and that's just an organization that pushes for Noticeability. So play with words right there. So
I need this information because my son is autistic. So I'm gonna, after this is over, you're gonna tell me about his group.
It's amazing. It's an amazing group. And dyslexia, it's not something that is taught in schools. They don't have the tools, the school system. They don't have the tools to teach a dyslexic kid how to read. I have gone through that phase. I have gone through the phase of private school and tried to educate the teachers there. It's very difficult to get everybody involved. That was also part of the reason we decided to do homeschool, because now my daughter is in a special class for dyslexic kids on how to read. And that's part also of why school choice is important, because there's a lot of fronts that play into this. And
this is a top priority for the state party. We desperately would like to see this pass, and hopefully the next legislative session we'll be able to get that passed.
Okay.
Because you're seeing a lot more demand for it from parents of all backgrounds. It's not just homeschoolers. It's African American families in inner cities who would like to see options for their children who are stuck in a failing school. It's Christian families who don't want the liberal teaching of biology and stuff in their schools. They want to approach it from a more Christian whole standpoint.
Right.
You know, there's just a whole plethora of people who want different options than what we have currently. And it's possible. And there are a lot of places that have made it work and have been successful. And I think it could work in Alabama too. And yeah. I think you'll see those test scores start going up.
Right. Right. So I think the last subject that I wanted to discuss with you, and this is on Lexit's agenda to educate the Latino communities as far as the Second Amendment. But I think we are one of the states here in Alabama that are leading that example on the Second Amendment.
Yep. Constitutional carry passed last session. We had been trying for several sessions to get it passed, and they got it passed. And that was a great day, because we had worked extremely hard hand in hand with some of our legislators who carried that bill, encouraging them, giving them support that they need, making statements to support them. And it truly was a great day when that passed, because that is a tax on the citizens of Alabama when you're required to get a permit for a right that's constitutionally guaranteed.
Right.
And that's not right. Still get a permit if you're going to travel out of state, because not everybody has the reciprocity without the permit. Just going to warn you there. But in this state, when you are going to the grocery store or something like that, and you feel the need for your own safety to carry, you should be allowed to carry without a permit.
Right. And so at the state level, I believe all the right moves are being made. Now at the federal level, we heard this speech from our president, which was scary, especially of the optics, you know, how he
presented. Oh, the Philadelphia speech.
Yes, how he presented that one.
That was very creepy.
It was.
It was like a throwback to a dictator in my mind. I mean, that's what I saw with the Marines behind him and the red lighting. I mean, it.
Why? That's my question. Why would they do that? But in any case, he's speaking. It wasn't said at that one. It was said on a different one. You know, when he says you need F-15s, if you want to come after the military, and he's talking about taking our Second Amendment rights away. What can we do there?
I know the legislature is looking to pass some legislation to codify those rights in the state. I think if he tries to, it'll eventually wind back in the courts. And I am hopeful with the current makeup of the Supreme Court, as long as they don't try to pack the bench between now and then, that it would get tossed out. I mean, there's nothing. It's crystal clear. We have the right to bear arms in this country. And he can't just wholeheartedly take it away from him. But once again, this is where voting comes in, because we've got to send senators to confirm Supreme Court justices who are going to support Supreme Court justices who uphold the Constitution. And so it's all trickle down. It's all about, they have a saying, all politics is local. And it's true. Who your local senator is, who your local state senator is, your local state representative, your city councilman. I mean, we're even, and to quickly go back to education, we're seeing liberals trying to take over local school boards because they're nonpartisan races. So they don't have to say they're a Democrat. They can go out and they think, oh, well, I know you from PTA and you're running for school board, but you know nothing about what their politics is.
Right.
You've got to get involved. You have to do, Oscar, what you did, which was you realized you I don't want to say you woke up, but you woke up one day and said, this isn't right. I've got to get registered to vote. Right. Get registered to vote. Voice your opinion at the ballot box. And we've got to get turnout up. So many people are just not participating. I don't know if it's people are sick of the text messages and the ads or whatnot. And I get that. But that's our only way to let you know, hey, this is where I stand on the issues. And people have got to start showing up at the polls to vote, because that's the only way we're going to hold on to this country and we're going to gain back the territory we lost since President Biden was elected.
And I think there is a lot of area of opportunity for us to reach our community, our Latino community. When I get to talk to a lot of them, they're not full involved, many of them. Some are. But the ones that are not full involved, it's how do we get them involved? And what I find out is you don't approach this from a politics standpoint. You approach it from the issues they care about.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
You know, I said things like, you want your children to be educated by this person who believes this and this and that. And they'd be like, no, that's scary. And we don't want that. And I say, well, your inaction is allowing this happening. So, you know, I see way more responses that way than any other way. So I agree with you. You just need to get people involved and don't label it politics in my mind. At the end of the day, that's what it is. But people got this stigma, especially immigrants and first generation Latinos, because you know they have more of the background from where our governments fail us, so we just don't trust it. We just don't care for them.
Well, I have two challenges before we finish this podcast. Number one is to any of your fans that are listening to us today, watching us today. If you have a group of friends that are fed up, I'm giving you this phone number, 205-212-5900, and ask to speak to me, because I work very closely with the Outreach Coalition. We will find a way, get a group of people together. We'll come and talk to you. You host it in your house. You have a community room you can use. We will come to you. We will talk to your friends, your family, your neighbors, so that you can find out what to do, how to get involved, be educated. We want to hear from you. We are listening. We see how unhappy in the poll numbers, it's the Latino likes it. It's showing up in the poll numbers.
Right.
We're here for you. We want to hear from you. We want to know about the issues that matter for you, what your concerns are, connect you with the people to solve the issues. Like you said, in the schools, you have a problem. Let us help connect you to your local school board rep. Let us help connect you to your state school board rep. That's what we're here to do. And the other thing is, and I will tell you, because when you first approached me, and I'm sure you, the reason we're speaking in English is my Spanish is horrible. And my father, Spanish was his first language. He married my mother, who's American. She doesn't speak Spanish at all, so it wasn't spoken at home. and I understand really well. I can speak a little bit, but that is my biggest embarrassment. Mm. So I challenge you to make sure your kids stay bilingual, because it's going to benefit them in the long run. It is keeping our culture alive. Right. And you can be American and you can be Latino and be bilingual, and it doesn't change anything. You know, when my father was born in the 1940s, it was not cool to speak Spanish. You know, you hid that you were Spanish. That's not true anymore. Make sure your kids learn English, but make sure they still speak their Spanish, because that, and I made sure my daughter is fluent. I made sure she got fluent. So make sure your kids are still speaking Spanish, because I know I regret it.
Yeah. Well, in our family, that's the case. Thank God. So far, my wife has done a great job of keeping my daughters, you know, to speak Spanish. So I'm thankful for that. Can you tell me that phone number one more time?
Sure. It's 205-212-5900. That's the Alabama Republican Party headquarters. I'm usually in the office 3 days a week, but if I'm not there, tell Rudy, who answers our phone most of the time, hey, if she's not there, I'll take her voicemail. I will call you back. I will get you connected with Kenneth and Cedric and the outreach team, and we'll come to you.
Okay. Good. So let's close this. I think we have to go to our event now. So we're past our time. So let me close this. But before I do, is there anything else you want to add or something we didn't speak about?
No, I think that's it. I mean, like I said, if you're not registered, get registered and show up to the polls this November, because every vote counts.
Sorry. Okay. Well, thank you for being here with me, and thank you for participating in this podcast.
I'd love to come back sometime. Okay. Really would.
Yeah. Next time we'll do it on the studio down in Prattville. It'll probably be a little bit easier. It's a nice studio. Actually, a local business that is sponsoring the studio.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So
support local business.
That's right. That's right. He's a local business. Awesome guy, Tommy. Love Tommy. All right. So if you want to talk to me, you can send a text message. You can send me a message on Signal or WhatsApp. The phone number is 334-568-8845. 334-568-8845. I have to look at the number on the phone because I have it memorized in Spanish, because I do the Spanish podcast all the time, but I never do it or hardly do it in English. So I don't know the phone number in English. It's kind of weird. But anyways, thank you for being here with us. God bless, and we'll see you later.